the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellett.
And welcome in for another edition of the Battleground State Report. As usual, go to BattlegroundStateNews.com. That's BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web. Also, Battleground State News on Facebook, as we focus on what's going on in the battleground states, the 17 or so states that actually will determine who gets elected president of the United States, who gets control of the Senate, who controls the U.S. House of Representatives, state houses, governor's races. Those battleground states are the key. And while most of the media, most of the polling focuses on national polling and national stories, we recognize, and that's why we want to help you understand and be informed, that it is what is happening in these states. It's actually what matters. I mean, you've got California, you've got New York. They're overwhelmingly blue. They're not going to matter in terms of whether President Trump carries the White House again. You've got one national pack for the Democrats. It's already indicated that they may back out of Ohio. They don't see that necessarily as a battleground they can win. In Florida, and we're going to talk more about this today, you have Governor DeSantis, who is at nearly a 60% or higher approval rating after he narrowly won the governor's office. He has grown the approval of the Florida voters overwhelmingly. That certainly bodes well for his ability to help transfer his support to President Trump in the presidential election. You know, if Florida and Ohio are pretty safely in the Republican column, that's going to bring this where President Trump's team is now saying they're focused on the Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania states. And you carry those and it's over. But there's really only 17 that matter.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's interesting. We've been tracking this now since about 4 months now, since November. And every week we kind of do the play-by-play as to what's changed in these 17 states that are going to make the difference in the presidential election. The only states that are really up for grabs, and among those states, some are more up for grabs than others. The 17 states in the Midwest are, as you mentioned, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. Those are probably the three most up for grabs in this 2020 election. Also, Ohio, Indiana, Missouri, Iowa, and Minnesota. In the West, it's Nevada, Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado. In New England, it's Maine and New Hampshire. And in the South, it's Virginia, North Carolina, and Florida. But of those, you know, I would say probably the four that matter most in my view today would be North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin. Those are the four that are the most up for grabs. Florida, as you mentioned, since the election in November of Governor DeSantis, a number of things have happened that his popularity has skyrocketed, and it's helped the president. And, of course, the president's policy is very tough policy on the Venezuelan socialist dictator, Maduro, has also helped his standing there with the Cuban and South American population in Florida.
One of the things that Governor DeSantis has also done is embrace some of the environmental policies that keep water clean, that keep air clean, that are reasonable, rational ways of promoting a clean environment that don't head down the path of whack job echo crazy.
Yeah.
And by embracing reasonable, rational environmental and conservation methods, that's one of the reasons that he's able to pull those independent voters, at least in an approval status, into his column. And I think Republicans ought to be paying attention to this. We don't always have to, as conservatives, as Republicans, stick to sort of the playbook of what we've always done. Mm-hmm. There are issues that matter to voters that if we craft them within that environmental and economic and prosperity and freedom and limited government module, that we can reach voters with a different way of dealing with these issues rather than the Democratic way of the world's going to collapse, you know, the environment's going to kill us all. It's as Robert Francis O'Rourke, sometimes known as Beto, he's evoking images of World War II and soldiers landing on the beaches on D-Day, that's the kind of environmental fight we have. That's not what DeSantis has talked about. It's not been the tone. It's not been the tenor. It's not been the approach that we can't take things to destroy our economic prosperity in order to promote a, quote, clean environment. But there is a middle ground. And I think as DeSantis is doing that, it allows him to reach voters that previously haven't really been in the Republican column. And I think Republicans in all these states ought to take note of what DeSantis is doing and try to figure out what plays in their state, what plays in their community that might fit the same model.
Don't you think voters in Florida, though, are kind of seeing DeSantis and Trump as two guys that represent the same policies, except one's president, one's governor?
Yeah, and DeSantis was one of the staunchest, strongest supporters of Donald Trump. Donald Trump, yeah. his presence in Florida literally helped carry Florida by that narrow margin for DeSantis. You had Rick Scott, the governor who became U.S. senator, win by a little bit larger margin. But both were very, very strong proponents of President Trump, and he has continued to be strong proponents on their behalf as well. So there is on the policy arena a lot of synergy between what DeSantis and Trump view. But now DeSantis is a governor. He's having to actually do stuff at the local level. And again, he's going beyond just sort of the Trump agenda and embracing some issues that have brought people to his side. That certainly will transfer, I think, to President Trump. You know, President Trump got DeSantis in. DeSantis may be the key to Trump carrying Florida.
Exactly right. And notice now, if you look at how do you pronounce this guy's name? The crystal ball guy, Larry Sabato.
Sabato.
So he was totally wrong on the 2016 general election. He thought Hillary would win, but he, in his battleground state analysis, he says Florida is leaning towards the GOP right now. I have to agree with that.
Yeah, I'd put Ohio and Florida both in the likely GOP column for the president. Again, we don't even know who the Democrats are going to pick as their nominee. Based on who they're picking from, they're not going to pick anybody great. But when you look at the lineup now, yeah, Ohio and Florida have to be moving in the right direction. We'll talk a little bit about where some other states, other opportunities for Trump may lie. Are there any blue states he can swing? That may be the real challenge. But if he just keeps what he had,
he wins.
This is the Battleground State Report. We'll be back with more. BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web, where you'll find links to some of the stories we're talking about, and we will be right back.
It's the Battleground State Report with Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy, and Doug Kellen.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. Steve Gill, Michael Patrick Leahy here with you this week. And Doug Kellett taking a little time off, but he'll be back with us next week. The bottom line of the presidential campaign at this point is the number of Democrats deciding to run keeps increasing. and yet nobody seems to be particularly enthusiastic as new names are put forth, as new names jump in. And those that have already been in for a while seem to be continuing to stumble, like Elizabeth Warren and others.
Yeah, there's a... And the leaders in the polls are two old white guys.
Yeah, and it does look like Biden is going to get in. He's making it more clear that he's going to get in. Bernie Sanders, of course, the other old white guy. You've got this new other white guy, Beto O'Rourke, who announced this week that he's in. So yeah, we hear all this talk about the diversity of the Democratic Party, and yet the ones that seem to be at the top of the polls for the Democrats are all these white guys.
Yeah. Kamala Harris, I think, is in third place in most polls. And then in a distant fourth is the very unlikable Senator Elizabeth Warren.
But so much of this right now is name ID, identification. And that's going to change as people start actually getting out there and stumbling over issues. The bottom line is that as we focus here with the Battleground State Report, it's how is this playing in places like Ohio and Michigan and Pennsylvania? And you've got all these Democrat candidates who are rushing to the far extreme left. Who can be more left-wing and more radical, whether it's embracing full-on socialism or the new Green Deal or these things that are not playing well in the battleground states? And don't get fooled, folks, by the national polls, because they are not reflecting anything about what's going on in the more localized battleground states. But even in the national polls, President Trump is continuing to pull votes higher in the polling than Barack Obama was doing at the same time.
Yeah.
And Barack Obama got reelected.
Well, yeah, it's very interesting. The other part about this is, you know, this Green New Deal from the far left, Justice, Democrat, Socialist, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, that's just utter lunacy. You know, no cows, no airplanes. Oh, we're going to die in 10 years. Almost everyone who's a leading candidate for the Democratic nomination, has embraced that lunacy, except for Joe Biden. And do you think old Joe, old crazy Uncle Joe, is going to have to move towards that particular lunacy?
I think you're going to see the other Democrat candidates divide up that socialism crazy group. And that Joe Biden, you know, again, he doesn't have to win with 100% of the Democratic Party votes. If he consistently pulls 50% and there's a dozen or two dozen candidates running, mm-hmm. he will win state after state after state mm-hmm. in the primaries. He will emerge with the votes and the delegates at the Democrat convention, which, by the way, they announced this week they're going to be doing in Milwaukee, because I can't think of anybody in the country that doesn't want to spend their week or so in the summer in Milwaukee when there were certainly other locations to go.
Well, it's a battleground state, and they're going to spend more time in it after the convention than Hillary did last year.
Presence there will be
presence. That's part of the plan. I mean,
but I don't think that the Republicans carried Ohio for Donald Trump because they held their convention in Cleveland. That by the time we got to the general election, was not why people were voting for or against President Trump.
I think that's right, but there was a presence there. And so at least they're putting a presence in Wisconsin, and they recognize that Wisconsin is – how Wisconsin turns out will be if we list it as sort of the top four toss-up states, that could go either way, as Pennsylvania, Michigan – New Hampshire, North Carolina, and probably you'd have to add Wisconsin to that list, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but you've still got, again, there's 16, 17 states. You have Colorado, where, again, the loony left has taken control of their state party mm-hmm. and with a loony left mm-hmm. governor who's wanting to, hurt the oil and gas industry.
Sure. Well,
there's a lot of people in Colorado. They're moving down the environmental wacko line. They're trying to do away with Colorado's votes even mattering by rejecting the Electoral College. You've got states that, because of what Democrats who've taken power are doing, are going to help move states back towards Trump, back towards the Republicans. Minnesota, you've got this Minnesota governor who's pushing a huge tax increase.
Yeah,
it did again.
28 cents a gallon.
Yeah, we're gonna stick it to the voters with a big gas tax increase. Those kinds of things that you're seeing are not necessarily going to move people towards the Democrats.
And in Minnesota, the president only lost Minnesota by 44,000 votes. The big issue there was the craziness and the Somali refugee community. All sorts of problems. Those problems have gotten worse, especially with the election of Representative Let Me Marry My Brother to Violate Immigration Laws, Ilhan Omar, and go ahead and do anti-Semitic tweets all over the place.
Well, and in Michigan, you've got Rashid Tlaib.
Yeah.
You have the governor. I don't know if it's in Michigan or Wisconsin, where they're pushing a 45-cent a gallon gas tax increase.
Yeah, I think that's Michigan. But so let's go back to that. These battleground states. This is why the local issues matter. And so let's look at it. Let's look at who is going to start turning out. Both states, Michigan and Minnesota, have that kind of the break between the two elements of the state, the urban Democrats and the rural/suburban Republicans. Who is penalized with a gas tax increase? Not the urban. It's the rural folks that have to drive a lot.
And the suburban folks.
Rural and suburban are going to be penalized. This is going to make them more motivated to go against the Democratic candidate. This is why people listen to the Battleground State Report.
Well, and part of the success that Democrats had in the midterm elections was moving some of those suburban votes into their column.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are women. When you get those suburban votes paying higher taxes thanks to Democrats, when you get those suburban voters seeing the radicalism of the pro-socialism, mm-hmm. pro-infanticide Democrats, you move people back in a different direction. And I think that the real secret – and the state I really want to watch what happens this year as it leads into next year is Virginia, where you have racial divide in the Democratic mm-hmm. Party, where you've got the racist mm-hmm. governor, Ralph – Blackface Northam, where you've got the lieutenant governor, an African-American who's facing not just one but two allegations of sexual assault and rape, the attorney general, a Democrat. Mm-hmm. All these are Democrats who also has some racial question marks of his brown face or blackface background. This creates a divide among that strong Democratic. We count on it. Mm-hmm. We're going to get 92% of their vote, the black vote. Well, if you start pulling just a few pieces of that off, if mm-hmm. in Virginia, for example, abortion becomes an issue in the black community, and the fact that more black babies are killed, are aborted in New York City than born in New York City. In state after state around the country, including Virginia, black abortions outnumber as a percentage white abortions, and in raw numbers in most cases. Nationally, while the black community is about 17% nationally of the population, over 30% of abortions are in the black community. And this is all driven because if the white liberals who are promoting abortion in the black community, and keep in mind that Planned Parenthood mm-hmm. and abortion clinics are almost exclusively located in mm-hmm. the black community mm-hmm. as a way to kill black babies, if white racist, white supremacists were promoting abortion of black babies, the black community would be repulsed and would be appalled by it and would reject it. But because it's white liberals promoting the murder of black babies, oh, okay, well, yeah. we're okay with that. You create a divide there. You make this an issue that African-American voters in Virginia see the distinction between, well, killing babies after they're born, killing babies right before they're born, that overwhelmingly are black babies. If you just shift 5 or 10% of that African-American mm-hmm. vote, that moral, Bible-believing, church-going black vote, then all of a sudden Virginia changes, both in terms of their state elections for state House and state Senate this year and as a battleground state next year.
So, yeah, all the trends here as of this moment, the past month, have been moving in President Trump's favor in each of these states. Virginia, which I think we would have said was leaning Democrat. All right. Now it's a toss up, probably, and might even be leaning GOP because of all this craziness.
A lot of that depends on who their nominee is. I mean, if you have a Kamala Harris who's on the ticket, does mm-hmm. that move the black community to be more mm-hmm. activated, more motivated? If it's not, if they don't have an African-American on that ticket, do black voters stay home?
Yeah. I mean, they're almost forced to do that. And yet there's not a lot. Kamala Harris.
Cory Booker. Crazy Cory.
Cory Spartacus Booker. I don't think that's going to work at all. He's
and
not going to
Kamala Harris is half Jamaican and half Indian. Again,
well, she'll get credit. She'll get credit though, for it.
She's, unlike Will Smith playing Serena Williams' daddy, she's black enough for Virginia.
I think so.
Sick. We'll be back. BattlegroundStateNews.com on the web. That's Battleground State News. You can go to Battleground State News on Facebook. And we'll be right back in a moment.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. As always, go to BattlegroundStateNews.com. That's BattlegroundStateNews.com. Battleground State News on Facebook, where we focus on the issues in the battleground states that may actually impact how voters cast their votes in the 2020 election. Again, I know it's like 600 days until Election Day, but it's never too early.
But we got to count them down. And now everybody's in the game. Now, I personally... This is why people need to listen to the Battleground State Report, because we do the hard work looking at what's happened in the past week on these battleground states so that your listeners don't have to go through it all the time. They just come here for an hour and listen to our analysis, which is going to be pretty good, about 2020 and what we'll summarize what they need to learn.
Now, we're sort of the Cliff Notes edition of American
Notes.
Politics.
Exactly. So last week.
Do they still use Cliff Notes in college? in between bribes, do they actually go to the Cliff Notes and kind of try to find that shortcut to education?
They're handed out in the bribe for rich people school of getting an SAT good score. You know, they hand out Cliff Notes with a little, you know, how to cheat game plan.
And don't you just love that we're kind of touching on this scandal involving bribery. All these elite liberals who preach so much that the downtrodden need a fair shake, that President Trump is not doing enough for the little people, they're the ones that are bribing and cheating their way to benefit themselves and their kids.
And their kids,
and leaving the honest, law-abiding, decent Americans behind. And the worst, Elizabeth Warren this week saying that she has absolutely no sympathy for folks who use their privilege, their elite status, and their money to gain favor. This is a woman who advanced her career through the false claim of being a Native American, and she has no sympathy for folks who did the false claim of being athletes or being academic scholars to college.
She just did it about 30 years earlier than they did. And, of course, it was all about the prestige, about being associated with an Ivy League school. That's what it was about, because she graduated from the University of Rutgers Newark Law School, which is – how many law schools are there? About like 250?
Probably around that number.
It's about ranked number 245, I think, something like that. I mean, maybe it's up to 200 these days. But it's not exactly the school you go to if you want to become a professor of law at an Ivy League school. And so what she did when she was down at Texas, which is, I mean, top 50, I mean, sort of like Arizona State. So
God forbid you would go to Arizona State.
I know. So she, for those of you listening, that Lori Loughlin's husband said to this scam artist who did the fraudulent admission, said, well, we got to do better than Arizona State. And so she got the University of Southern California for their precious daughter. Now, what's interesting about this, so she's at Texas and she wants to get out, right, because it's not good enough on the prestige scale. And so then she invents this idea that she's actually a Native American, which she's not. Zero documentary evidence, zero genetic evidence, really, even if despite the one that she came up with. So she claims she's Native American, and it checks the box, and it gets her into University of Pennsylvania Law School and then to Harvard.
I think in her DNA test, it actually showed that she had this very small, minor portion that might be South or Central American. Yeah, again, it's like 1,024th,
which is like, less than 1/10 of 1% of her DNA.
Yeah, and you'll have more Hispanic blood in your heritage if you eat at Taco Bell for lunch today. I mean, she has virtually zero, but certainly zero Native American.
Zero Native American. It's almost as if she took she photoshopped the Native American DNA on her picture as the daughters of Lori Loughlin, the actress, Aunt Becky, who's probably going to the big house, not the full house. Anyway, so they photoshopped the pictures of her daughter on actual crew athletes. And so they photoshopped Native American DNA onto Elizabeth Warren's
picture. To Elizabeth Warren's credit, after that really horrible kind of kickoff where she did the video where she midway slapped her hands and said, I'm going to get me a beer.
She says that like never before.
She didn't underline her Native American status by clapping her hands and going, I'm going to get me some fire water. So she has been able to show some restraint in recent years in terms of her Native American claims. When you look at the cast of crazies that the left is putting forward as their candidates, one of the reasons that Joe Biden looks so reasonable is because everybody else is so crazy.
He's not entirely crazy. He's just a standard, old-style quasi-socialist liberal, not full-blooded socialist.
But even he had to back off when he said something nice about Vice President Mike Pence, because the radical left was just pitching a hissy fit and demanded that he retract his claim that Mike Pence is a nice guy. I mean, this is how driven they are by the left. It's what the Democrats are facing in Congress with Ocasio-Cortez and Ilhan Omar driving the agenda. And just this week, Nancy Pelosi could not stop them from forcing the Democrats further down the path of left by refusing to condemn the anti-Semitic comments of Ilhan Omar. The left is truly driving the crazy train way off the tracks, and they can't help themselves.
Oh, it's a very good point, because now the Democrat Party is officially the party of anti-Semitism, being led by the Muslim Somali-born refugee who apparently, allegedly, committed immigration fraud by allegedly marrying her brother to avoid.
And we have to say allegedly, because it's never been investigated, even though the paperwork, the details, everything is there. Why isn't there an investigation?
So the thought leaders of the Democratic Party are the anti-Semitic Ilhan Omar, who's doubling down on her anti-Semitism, and apparently that's the official position of the Democratic Party. Every Democrat is embracing that and not condemning her anti-Semitism. And then also the far left, the world, the sky is falling, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, those are the people that are defining the Democratic policies. And I think the anti-Semitism, of course, is going to hurt, but particularly in Florida.
Well, and theoretically, these Democratic candidates will move to the far extreme left to cater to the radical voices within the Democratic
Party. To get the
nomination. And then presumably try to move back to the middle. You can't move that fast, that far. And everything you've said up until that time is going to come back to haunt you. The problem that the Republicans are going to have, and I say this is just as a media and communications guy that dabbles in the political arena pretty regularly, it's going to be such a target-rich environment. What do the Republicans use? Because, I mean, if you've got 15 attack points, people just – they don't absorb
that. You only need three.
So which of the three do you go with?
Yeah.
And that's, I think, going to be the challenge. Republicans are going to be tempted to hit all over the board.
No.
And that's not going to work.
So it's almost – you know, Richard Nixon's maxims on politics are so true today when you look at the Democratic field. He used to say, if you're a Republican candidate – in the primaries, you run as far as to the right as you possibly can. And once you get the nomination, you run as far to the center as you possibly can. And your point is you have to run as far to the left as you possibly can to get the Democratic nomination.
And you still won't be left enough.
Yes. And so when you're way over there hanging off the cliff, you just can't run back far enough to the center.
And again, when we talk about the geography and the battleground states, they're running to cater to the far left in New York and California and some of these liberal enclaves in those states. I mean, it's not that the whole state of California is that far left. The major urban centers are that extreme left, the San Franciscos and others.
The coastal extremes.
But that's not what a Democrat who's a blue-collar man or woman working on the auto line in Michigan, they're not in that arena in terms of what they think. And I think that's where the Democrats are really – failing to understand that while they're catering to the loudest voices and extremists in their party, in limited geographic areas in their party, they're ignoring their own base in the rest of the country.
So running far, far, far to the left is what they're going to have to do to get the nomination. All that's going to do is going to increase their votes in the general election from states that are going to win anyways.
Well, and possibly increase their votes because, again,
possibly,
in other parts of California where they're getting a taste of what Democrats actually are now that they took control of the House, they picked up five congressional seats in Orange County. Those votes and those seats may flop back after the opportunity to see the Ilhan Omars and the Ocasio-Cortezes and the rest of the crazy loony left. You're going to see a backlash in even Democrat areas because it's a bridge too far. We'll talk more about it in a moment. This is the Battleground State Report. Go to battlegroundstatenews.com. That's battlegroundstatenews.com on the web, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to the Battleground State Report.
And welcome back in. This is the Battleground State Report. One of the things that we are seeing, and we talked a little bit about it in the earlier segment, is this battle over African-American voters. And again, you're seeing it play out in Virginia as there's been sort of this divide within the Democratic Party between black voters who are upset that the Democrats have not done enough to deal with the racist governor, the blackface governor, that they're seeing that the blackface white governor is still in place, and yet the black lieutenant governor accused of not one but two counts of rape may get removed. And you're going to see, I think, over the next few months, what happens if the black lieutenant governor gets removed from office and the white racist governor stays in office? These are all Democrats. Are black voters going to feel like the Democratic Party doesn't represent them? And if just a proportion stays home or decides voting for these guys,
doesn't have to be that
it's
much.
It's a big problem.
Yeah, I mean, because historically, virtually no African Americans have voted for Republicans. What is it, 8%?
Yeah, 8%. And President Trump said it best, you know, what have you got to lose?
Yeah.
If President Trump, again, with unemployment among African Americans dropping to historic lows, with opportunities, with job growth, with this racial divide in the Democratic Party, with the abortion of black kids, far exceeding the percentage of whites. You've got some wedges that can be driven. Now, because of that, the Democrats are going to be desperate to turn out the black vote in high numbers. They're going to be desperate to consolidate the black vote. That's one of the reasons you're seeing so much of this hue and cry about racism and fake claims like the Jussie Smollett claim and others.
Yep.
This is going to be the most racially divisive, I think, presidential election we've ever seen, because the Democrats have to create this false racial divide in America, this false claim of all Republicans are racist, and that when they go home, they put on their Klan robes and sip their cocktails while watching old Archie Bunker reruns and cheering. They have to portray that image to try and scare and motivate that black voter base, because if that voter base does not turn out in big numbers or there's slippage to the Republicans, they lose. They not only lose the White House, but they're likely to lose the House and keep the Senate and maybe even see the Republicans grow their base in the Senate. This will be the most racially divided election I think we've ever seen.
I think you're
right.
Even
though we're probably on better conditions than we've ever seen.
Yeah, but you're going to see that those issues come out. And, of course, that caricature you just described, it really relates to a Democrat, Governor Ralph Northam of Virginia, who was at the very best racially insensitive.
And who voted against the Civil Rights Act? The Democrats. Who founded the Klan? The Democrats. Who conducted the lynchings in the South? The Democrats. I mean, when you look at the racist history in America, it was the Democrats
not
who
the
were the slave owners.
Yeah.
It was the Republicans, led by Abraham Lincoln, who fought to release the slaves and end slavery in America, up until the we're gonna give free stuff to buy votes, kind of like a college recruiting scandal in the 60s. People like Martin Luther King were Republicans because they knew the history of the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and that really occurred. It's really interesting if you look at the history of this. When did that start changing? It wasn't until Herbert Hoover. I mean, until Herbert Hoover. Yeah, most African Americans, most black people in America voted for Republican candidates. And then Herbert Hoover because, you know, the original segregationist, the guy who segregated the federal government employees was Democrat, Woodrow Wilson. Yeah, he's an avowed racist, Democrat. And of course, it was one of his allies who worked for him was Herbert Hoover. Worked in the Wilson administration. And then when Herbert Hoover was elected president, he did nothing and was actually proactively not helpful to African Americans at times of flood problems and things of that nature. And so the vote started moving in the late 1920s, when Hoover was not responsive. And then it really shifted in the 1960 general election when Richard Nixon didn't reach out to Martin Luther King. And John F. Kennedy did when he was in Birmingham jail, I think it's where it was. But the proof is in the pudding because, as you point out, what have Republicans actually done? 1964 Civil Rights Act passed because of Republican votes. Higher percentage of Republican senators, even though they were the minority, voted for that bill than did Democrats. All the Southern Democrats were opposed to it.
Well, and occasionally you'll hear, yeah, but all those Southern Democrat politicians flipped over to the Republican Party. Well, that's not true. Strom Thurmond was, I think, the only one that actually flipped parties. George Wallace never became a Republican.
No.
None of the other Democrats.
The classic segregationist stayed Democrats. Died out.
Klansman Robert Byrd, who was honored by Hillary Clinton, is an icon. Was a Klan member. Was a Democrat till the very end. So they didn't switch parties.
But it's a perception thing, isn't it? I mean, if you were to sit down and talk with a African American black voter who votes Democrat all the time, they would say, well, you know, Republicans hate us and Democrats help us. And they're not familiar with that history. The Republicans have done a terrible job of communicating that history and the comparative advantage to the black community of Republican free market policies.
Well, I think that's where Donald Trump was able to pick up a portion of the black vote, and it may expand as we head into 2020 if he does an effective job, despite all the claims of he's a racist and all the hoax crimes that we're going to see. The bottom line is he said, what have you got to lose? And he's going to be able to go back, I think, to black communities where unemployment is lower, where where the threat of illegal aliens who are going to pull their jobs more than they're going to pull white elitist jobs in suburbia away.
Yeah.
President Trump is going to have a strong argument to make in the black community. He has shown a willingness to go into the black community to make those arguments. And again, he's not going to win a majority of black votes.
No.
But if he gets 15%, Democrats
huge.
Cannot win.
Yeah, and I think that's what they're targeting. And I think they've got a very good chance of moving from 8% towards 15%. I don't know if they'll get to 15%.
But that's why you're going to see more of the Jussie Smollett fake hate
right.
crimes. That's why we just had another kid that was a lacrosse player at a college scrolled, you know, hate speech on his dorm room. It was him. Almost all of these race hate crimes turn out to be hoaxes.
Yeah.
And the Democrats and their allies in the mainstream media amplify them because they have to create
for a period of time
a
until
race
the truth
war
comes
in
up.
America
yeah.
to benefit.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you're right. I think the black community is starting to say, nah, not working out so well with the Democrats. Maybe President Trump is right. Maybe I should give him a chance. What have they got to lose?
And the identity politics of, well, we're just going to run some people who have black skin to get your votes. But again, in a lot of these communities, they've had black mayors.
Mm-hmm.
Lives haven't gotten better. The streets haven't gotten safer.
Well, and New York is so shot. Much better thanks to Cory Spartacus Booker, right?
And again, you look in Detroit. You look
Ooh.
In Washington, D.C. You've had black leadership in these communities, and it has not produced a better life for black voters in those communities. School choice. Here's a prime example. The president of the United States is in favor of giving people the opportunity and the funding to choose the best schools.
Mm-hmm.
In Washington, D.C., where they tried it for a while until the Democrats worked hard to kill it, you had black families that were able to see their kids go to some of the best schools in the community
mm-hmm.
rather than be
mm-hmm.
trapped in the worst. And that's one of the reasons the Democrats have to fight so hard against school choice across the country, not because it doesn't work, but because it does work.
And it will cut into their base. And you see that playing out all over the place. So as we wrap up today, it's kind of interesting thing to note here, Steve, is that we're looking at the big national emergency vote, right? That happened. And
the border crisis, whether to stand with the president or not. The
president declared a national emergency, and which under the 1976 Emergency Powers Act, he's got the authority to do. Congress didn't like the fact that he was going to use that to reallocate some of the money they'd already authorized and appropriate, move it a tad in the budget description, still in the military construction view. And so 12 Republicans went over to vote with the Democrats to try to undermine the president.
Most of the usual suspects, Susan Collinses,
yeah.
the Murkowskis, the Mitt Romneys.
And some of them were in battleground states like Rob Portman in Ohio. Marco Rubio in Florida, Roy Blunt in Missouri. I've heard some analysts say, and I don't agree with this, and see what you think, that this portends poorly for the president because these Republican guys are leaving him. The fact that, Rob Portman is abandoning the president on this vote the senator from Ohio, does that mean that the base in Ohio is likely to abandon the president on this?
No, I think they're likely to be more angry at Rob Portman for not focused on border security. Again, you also saw Cory Gardner in Colorado who voted with the president. He's up for election in 2020, presumably has a
He's
tough race.
He's up in 2020.
He voted with the president on this one.
Smart
you
move
also
on
saw
his part.
A flip-flop of one of the senators who was going to oppose the president flipped and supported the president at the end of the day. So, and again, in Florida, you had Marco Rubio vote. Again, he's an anti-Trumper deep down.
Really?
And he looks for every opportunity. Rick Scott voted with the president.
Yeah.
So you had in Tennessee, you had Marsha Blackburn vote with the president. Lamar, I cater to the left more than to the right. Alexander voted against the president, stabbed the president in the back. And none of these Republican senators were pitching a hissy fit just a few short years ago when Barack Hussein Obama loaded up $1.7 billion in cash on a pallet to deliver to the Iranian terrorist regime. None of them were concerned about appropriated funds and allocated funds and all this. They weren't the least bit concerned when money was going, taxpayer money, was going to terrorists. But they're vitally concerned when the president is spending money to secure our border from the influx of drugs, gang members,
disease,
terrorists, and everything else. They don't have any concern about that, even though they all are expressing their concern with their talk. But when it comes to actually doing something, None of these people are in favor of doing anything.
Yeah, and I think you've just illustrated the hypocrisy of those 12 Republicans and the fact that this is a political vote, not a constitutional vote. It's a political vote designed entirely to undermine President Trump.
And you mentioned in the battleground states, it was Tillis that flip-flopped from writing an op-ed against the president to voting with the president, North Carolina. So again, two of those key battleground states, we've got senators who are going to be facing voters soon. Tom Tillis in North Carolina, Cory Gardner voting with the president.
It's a very good point. It's a very good point. And I think they're, you know, those that are up for re-election, as in Gardner, and Tillis is up when? 2020 or 2022?
I think he's up in 2020 as well. Maybe 2022.
Either 2020 or 2022, but I think that's a very good point. I mean, they realize that the president's policies are popular in these battleground states, and they're looking at facing the voters again in their Senate races, and they don't want to really incur that wrath, do they?
And again, when you're looking at the flood of illegals over the border, the diseases, the violence, the crime, the drugs, the bodies that are taking away jobs, that's going to be a better argument, I think, for folks that are defending the president and his fight to secure our border than those who are siding with the let's get rid of ICE, Let's have open borders, let's let these people come in and take our jobs. That is not going to play well, I don't think, with voters either in primaries or the general election in 2020. And we may see that play a little bit in Virginia this year with state House and state Senate races as well.
Another week ahead of us. Come back next weekend, and you'll hear about all the intervening events in the battleground states and get your fix for what's going to happen in the 2020 general election.
In the meantime, go to battlegroundstatenews.com. That's battlegroundstatenews.com. And we will be back right here next week, same time.